I am walking down a smuggler's trail in the Darien. And just to give you a sense of what it's like to walk in the Darien, I'm going to turn the camera around and I'm going to let you see what I'm seeing as I'm walking down this path.
This is the Hot Zone. Engaging with the news in a whole new way, international war correspondent Chuck Holton brings insight into areas of crisis and lets you help those affected.
There may not be any roads in the Darien jungle, but there are plenty of footpaths and trails like this one. Some of them were made by drug runners and smugglers. Others were made by the migrants. But that does not mean that this is not some of the most challenging and extreme topography that you'll find anywhere in the world. I am walking down a smuggler's trail in the Darien jungle here, right next to this river. And the reason it's a smuggler's trail is because they bring the dope up this river, they dock out here, and then they hump that, you know, just a couple keys each guy of cocaine or whatever up here, and then walk it through the jungle. And just to give you a sense of what it's like to walk in the Darien, I'm just going to turn the camera around. I'm going to keep talking, but I'm going to turn the camera around and I'm going to let you see what I'm seeing as I'm walking down this path. So here we go. So the migrants that are coming through this have no idea what they're getting themselves into when they start out. The smugglers don't do anything to tell them what they're into either. As a matter of fact, they lie to them and kind of tell them that it's an easy walk, no problem. They don't tell them that they've got to cross rivers like this one down there by swimming. We heard from people today who knew folks who lost their babies to the river when they were trying to swim across, and babies got washed away. Very sad. They walked for legitimately up to a week or more through this kind of very extreme topography. I'm walking along the river here, so it's not that steep, but even still, I'm starting to breathe hard here. Not to mention the fact that it's, I mean, late afternoon, but it's probably 88, 90 degrees, maybe a little bit more, but it's the humidity that just wipes you out. You feel like a glazed donut all the time out here. And I'm just walking along. Now, this is the kind of trail where, you know, if you step wrong because of what's down at my feet here, you can't really see the ground all the time. There's so much undergrowth that it's pretty easy to just step off an embankment and not even see it. And of course, there are no street lights or any kind of lights out here at night. Ouch. There's lots of thorns. So once it gets dark, which happens fairly early, about maybe 5:30, 6, once it gets dark, it's you're not moving anywhere. You can't see your hand in front of your face. And it's after dark when all of the animals come out, all of the really nasty animals. Now, I want to show you this tree right here because, you know, just imagine you're stumbling along here and reach out for support and grab this tree. Look at the size of those thorns. Those things are wicked, absolutely wicked. Well, that tree, and they've got black palm, which is even worse out here, not to mention all the bugs and snakes and scorpions and who knows what. But I've been told that even in the just recent past, that this path I'm walking right now has been used by drug smugglers to carry, you know, pack loads of dope or cocaine or heroin or whatever through the jungle. They take it up here and try to smuggle it past the border guards and get it up to Panama City. From there, they can take it over to Cologne and they can ship it out to any place in the world. So that's just a little bit of what it's like to walk on a smuggler's path. And now imagine doing that with no food, with drinking water out of this chocolate-covered river back here, and nothing to sleep with, and do that for a week. Now, that's why a lot of people are dying on this trek. And they come out in such bad shape. The other thing I wanted to point out is that even though it's in the 80s, once it gets dark out here, when you lay down on the ground, I've never been so cold. And I say that because when I was in the military, I went through jungle warfare training here in Panama in the jungle near Fort Sherman twice. That's a 3-week course, and you're out in the field. We would patrol through the jungle just like this behind me. And when we got where we were going and when it got dark, we didn't have a bivouac. We didn't have shelters. We didn't have, you know, tents or hammocks or anything like that. We just lay down on the dirt on the jungle floor and tried to sleep. And I tell you, it's no fun trying to sleep when you're feeling waking up with something crawling across your face or something like that. That's a whole lot of no fun. And the jungle gets very noisy out here at night. But I got so cold just because of the humidity. You're already so, you know, just exhausted and dehydrated. And so these people are really facing some incredible hardships to come across here.
Except the last time I was on one of these boats, it was in 2012. And while I was out here on the river, I got a message that my father had suddenly passed away. Actually, we were just getting on the boat when I got the call. And so it's kind of, I don't know, I have mixed feelings being out here right now. The last time I was on one of these boats, it was in 2012. And while I was out here on the river, I got a message that my father had suddenly passed away. Actually, we were just getting on the boat when I got the call. And so it's kind of, I don't know, I have mixed feelings being out here right now. So if you can imagine the migrants who are coming through the Darien are coming into these incredibly remote villages where there just are not a lot of resources. There are not a lot of food. There's not a lot of drinkable water. Obviously, the water in this river is not drinkable. And so it's causing a lot of strain on the indigenous communities in this area. This is the end of the road here. This is Yavisa, which is the very furthest point south that you can drive from North America. And it's actually the big town in this area. Where we're going to go now is some of the smaller villages that are upriver. So the migrants that are coming through this part of the Darien deep in the jungle, they don't just have to deal with crossing rivers like this or the natural hazards like bugs and wild animals and snakes and scorpions and things like that. They're having to deal with armed bands of thugs who are industrializing the robbery of these migrants as they come through here. And many of them never come out alive.
My name is Alan Foster. I'm from upstate South Carolina. I work with the mission Multiply and live in Yavisa, Darien, Panama. Multiply is a mission agency working all around the world that was originally birthed as Mennonite Brethren and is now seeking to be form bridges across institutions, across people groups, and seeking to take gospel of Jesus to the least reached around the world. How do we do that? By preaching the good news and by serving the least reached. Well, specifically the ministry that I was called into, we were invited. I lived in an Imbara village for 2 years previously, working with Peace Corps. Following that, one of the local churches, composed of the Wonan and Imbara peoples, they invited me to return with my family and serve them to help take water to the communities. So we take water that the body needs and the living water to the villages of these people that are actually, they're in Darien, Panama, and also one of the least reached areas in this side of the world is Choco, Colombia, where the gospel still is prohibited by law and people are persecuted for preaching. Choco is a region, it's a large region, about the size of Panama, a district in Colombia. So the Panama-Colombian border, it was an indefensible line that was drawn when Panama ceded from Colombia, and it divides both the Imbara, Wonan, different people groups across the region. The majority of them are actually over in Choco. And because the gospel was so heavily persecuted starting back in the 50s and 60s, that's actually why the Imbara and Wonan came over to Panama, the ones that are here, but the majority remain back there. And it's just a very dark area, largely controlled by guerrillas and paramilitaries. And there's a lot of hardship, both physical and spiritual oppression that's happening right now to the peoples there. the migrants, the journey to get through the Darien Gap, as it's known, which is the zone between Colombia and Panama, takes anywhere from 5 to 8 days to walk. Depending on the weather, there may or may not be water. There's parts that are nearly impassable where people have to crawl on all fours. There's people are literally traipsing over the top of clothed skeletons to be able to get through, and not all of them make it. So it's a very sad situation, but the people that arrive have just come through one of the most emotionally impactful experiences of their life, and we actually feel it's a really good opportunity for them to be receptive to the gospel here. The last time we were up here in this particular village, we were able to pray with a group of from Cameroon that were through and be able to encourage them and hear a little bit of their story. And we have now been working with the local church. All the work we seek to do is to empower the local church here. So we've helped them build a hospedaje, should be a place for refugees to stay, and they receive them in their home, share the gospel with them, give them water as they're passing through. Canaan is a village of about 400 people, and Cinefront changes their rules and regulations along the way to try to keep as much control as they can. You know, they're understaffed, underfunded, but they're trying to do the best they can with the situation. So Canaan has become a waypoint. It's a village of about 400 people. And on any given day, 100 new people come in, and Cinefront tries to get another 100 people out. So the additional population might be 1,500 people in the village. So that means logistics for food, logistics for water, logistics for medical care. A difficult task that doesn't actually correspond to Cinefront, but they're doing what they can. So we actually built a water system in the village prior to the refugee, to the migrant crisis. It was designed for 400 people, so it's not enough. So one need we have right now, that system is powered by solar panels, and we'd really like to expand it for as a temporary measure to run on a generator power. So we need a transformer, and we need a small electric plant, cost that would probably run a couple grand to be able to pump water 24 hours a day and meet the current immediate need for water in the village. As they come into the village, there's no shelter, there's nothing there whatsoever. So you'll see them, some in tents in the communal building, but the majority of them are actually in people's homes. Now, just your average villager is there, it's good economy for them, even though it's obviously really uncomfortable having that many people in your village, and they're charging a couple dollars or something like that per night for the villagers to stay. But the people in our church have actually extended and offered their homes for free as an act of love and mercy to these folks coming through who have, in almost all circumstances, have been robbed coming through Colombia. A couple visits ago, I saw the back of what I thought was an old man laying on a porch, and when his back was just chewed up, it was just chewed to bits. And when he rolled over, he was maybe 25 years old from India. But meaning that the people are almost dead. They've walked for 5 to 8 days with no food and little water. Their feet may be infected. Other parts of their body are infected. Their feet are swollen. They're in rags and tatters. Their flesh is just chewed up. It looks like they came out of a meat grinder sometimes, in some cases.
This is the problem. Do you want to make it easier for people to get up here? If you do, anything you do to make it easier is going to mean more people are coming. And the real question that Panama is having to wrestle with is the same question that the United States is having to wrestle with. What do you do to, you know, where does your humanity end and your care for the American taxpayer begin? Because obviously, many of these people do have a legitimate claim to asylum, especially the ones coming through the jungle here. But the people who, but you know, the United States just can't take the entire population of the world. And so how many millions are we going to have to take before the U.S. government gets serious about putting an end to at least the factors that encourage illegal immigration from around the world? That's the big question. I'm Chuck Holton. Thanks for watching. We'll see you tomorrow on the Hot Zone.
The Hot Zone is produced by Amy Holton and Livefire Media. Copyright 2019.